Hello and welcome once again to Healthy Bloomington with Dr. Andry. I am Dr. Matt Andry, a family physician here in Bloomington, Indiana. And on this program, we talk about issues of health and medicine and look to give you information to equip you as best as possible to get the most out of your healthcare interactions. And with me once again today is my very good friend and colleague, Carl Lenore. Carl is the host of Superhuman Radio, which is a website, and it's a radio program dedicated to informing people about fitness and health. And he's been one of my best friends now for years, and is a continual source of new information. The guy teaches me stuff all the time and tells me where to go next. He's always blowing me up about being this, that, or that other doctor. But you know, none of this none of us live in a vacuum, and none of us learn in a vacuum. And he's just an absolute wealth of information and has helped me kind of move my practice in new directions. I don't even know if he knows that, but you sure have.
So. thank you. That's very flattering.
Yeah.
Very flattering.
Well, and we just did a show and we talked about your program. We talked about testosterone. And I wanted to talk about something that you and I have been discussing, you know, in a couple other venues. And that is about, let's call it true detox, I think was the term you used. And before I say that, one thing I want to say is that I was talking with a good friend of mine, Isaiah Pittman, who's I call him a recovering endocrinologist. he's a very good endo over in Terre Haute, Indiana, and he's just brilliant. And he's from the south side of Chicago, and you know, just culturally how he fits there in Terre Haute is just wonderful. I love it. But he is so intelligent. But he and I have talked many times, and he told me that, you know, there are four pillars to medical decision making, four legs upon which physicians stand when they're making decisions with their patients. And he said, and this isn't really good news, but it's important for people to know. And the first pillar is media, popular media. I mean, physicians, prescribers, they watch the same Super Bowl commercials that you and I do. And when a new commercial comes out about this drug or this disease state, they know about it, and that influences the things they think about, things they ask patients about, because they think their patients will know it too. Also, the next thing is regulatory issues. That will influence someone's decision-making. If the FDA comes out and says, oh my gosh, you're going to get in trouble if you write this, they said, put a black box warning on some medicine. If they release that, and then next thing you know, lawyers are putting up ads about this drug's getting sued for this problem, which oftentimes isn't even true yet. But it influences the way doctors prescribe. They'll take people off medicine, even though there's no proof they need to yet. They'll change what they do because they're afraid of that pressure. The third leg they stand on is popular practice. It's they do what their colleagues do. They do what they've always done themselves. I remember when I started doing hormone medicine, I filled out my protocols by a bit of clinical experience and a heck of a lot of reading physiology books. That's how I figured it out. And I took those protocols to a number of different endocrinologists and I said, you know, here's what I'm thinking I'm doing. And it's what I'm doing with patients. Please tell me where I'm wrong. And to a person, they said, no, those look really sound. And I said, don't spare my feelings. Rip it up. I want to know. I mean, I'm taking care of people here. I said, no, it looks really good. I said, well, is this what you do in your practice? They said, oh, no. And I went, what? And they said, I said, well, why? They said, well, our colleagues would never go for it. And I just, my heart sunk because, you know, they're human, just like you said, and they don't live in a vacuum, and they want to be accepted. And because of that, they will not pay attention to the fourth leg of medical decision making, and it's the one that should get so much more billing, and that's actual science. And that's where you come in, because you've been a stalwart of good science, at least as a place to start, at least as a place to ask questions. And that should be fueling the way that we're making decisions much more. But I've got more patients that look at PubMed than I do physicians. And thanks for that. But it'd be nice if we could get more of those of us in medicine doing that same thing.
Well, you've got to be a critical thinker first. Most physicians are overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I, you know, no one is a child and goes, I want to be a doctor because I want to have a lot of money and I want to have to deal with the FDA and the DEA. And no, they say, I want to be a physician because I want to help people. People who want to be physicians, they do it for altruistic reasons. But when they get through school, they're indoctrinated, they're manipulated, they're twisted around. And when they come out, they go, oh, man, I got, you know, $500,000 in debt,
yep.
and I have to work, and I, in order to do that, I have to go along to get along. And then all of a sudden, and I think a lot of doctors are, quite frankly, but to some degree, are disenchanted and disillusioned.
Yes.
I have to believe they are. Unless they're doctors who have said, I just can't do this anymore, and my lifestyle allows me to go in a different direction. I'm going to become a concierge doctor, or I'm going to have a different kind of practice, or I'm going to practice anti-aging medicine. You have no idea how many people go from emergency care to anti-aging medicine. Those people get burnt out in the emergency room, and they go, I just want to deal with people who are well, who want to be well, instead of the guy who's got, you know, just lost his leg from the motorcycle accident. And so doctors are by and large disenchanted. They're not part of the problem. They are unfortunately pawns of the problem.
Yes.
But when you find doctors who are critical thinkers and the patient is well-armed, like we talked about in the last interview, magic can happen.
Yep.
Complete reversal of diseases can happen. It happens.
Yep.
But it takes both of them to be critical thinkers.
Yep. And you're exactly right. And one of those topics, and this is one that you and I, again, had talked about before, and it's related to what we talked about in testosterone, in that, you know, a lot of factors, including a low oxygen, if somebody has a history of smoking or is around secondhand smoke, doesn't breathe well, they can develop thicker blood. You know, the blood, blood is a solution made up, it's a tissue, and it's made up of liquid. That does include water, proteins, plasma, and cells. And it, depending on how much cells, how many cells there are per volume and how many proteins per volume, that fluid has a viscosity. And there's a range of viscosity you want blood in. And if you don't have enough red cells, you can't carry oxygen well. I mean, when we give people, we used to give people blood at a much easier threshold than we do now. I mean, you got to have your hemoglobin, if you're just kind of sick, down at 6 or 7 sometimes before people will give you blood, unless you're having a heart attack. Then we know you need that up at about 10, otherwise you lose more heart tissue. Why? Because you're dependent upon enough red cells to carry oxygen to all that tissue. However, the more red cells you have in the blood to carry oxygen, the slower that blood moves, the more thick it is. And there's a range within which that works well, and there's a range within which it doesn't. And once you go above it, you get a sluggish blood that doesn't move well, doesn't carry out toxins very well. And since it's blood that sits longer, it has a greater risk of clotting. And, you know, we're making thousands of clots every minute of every day, and we just break them down immediately, and they don't cause any problem. But you don't want that balance to swing too far one direction. And this is something that you have been kind of looking at for listeners, and just as a general topic, and then personally, right?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to mention one thing that you touched upon. When we talk about blood viscosity, this is a very, very new area that most labs are not even equipped to test for.
Mm-hmm.
There are a handful of labs out there today that even know how to test for blood viscosity. And there are people listening to this show right now that are going to go, oh, yeah, I know somebody like that. But right now you're seeing a rampant number of people who are having something called an aortic tear.
Mm-hmm.
They're relatively healthy people. They're not overweight. Their blood pressure seems to be well within what is considered normal ranges, yet they're rushed to the hospital with an aortic tear. What happens is when your blood goes from a liquid to a sludge to a jelly, then it puts pressure on the walls of the blood vessels, and the wall that has the greatest pressure applied to it, because it's right coming out of the pump and it has to make a really, really fast turn,
yep,
is the aorta.
Yep.
And so you have people that go, I don't know why, my doctor doesn't understand why, I have an aortic tear, I almost died, my blood pressure is fine, my BMI is normal, I eat well, I jog, I don't understand. It's because your blood viscosity was way too high for way too long.
Mm-hmm. And
so that's just one thing I want to throw out there.
Yeah. And what do people do about that high blood viscosity?
Well, there's a lot of things you could do. So I've been talking about detoxes. I've had people come on my radio show and talk about detoxes, but I've always felt like it just doesn't make sense. You know, the salt detox makes you go potty for a couple hours, but that's just cleaning out your intestines and your gut a little bit. you know, if you really want to detox, if you really want to detox, you have to go to the source of where the toxins accumulate. And that's inside the body, in the tissue. And the best way to do that is every 8 weeks, go give a pint of blood.
Hmm.
When you go and give a pint of blood, what happens next is, first of all, you'll give it away dirty blood, but don't feel bad. They need it anyway. They need it for people who are in bad shape.
They can scrub it. It's good.
Yeah, that's right, and they do. But you're giving away dirty blood, and then the body gets busy on making, guess what, brand new clean blood.
Yes.
Okay? And if you do this often enough, we've talked about it on the show, you do this for 16 months, every 2 months, you will end up with what is considered about 80% brand new, fresh, clean blood.
Yeah.
Now, that's taking into account that you're constantly coming in contact with toxins and so on. And this is even more important for men, because testosterone causes us to hold more toxins than women do.
Hmm.
So we really need this even more than women. But women benefit from this as well, and especially after menopause.
Well, and
don't
women
get blood every 2 months.
And during their reproductive years, women get this.
Yes, because they bleed, but they still don't. I don't think they give up a pint of blood.
They don't, not to that degree.
But they do give up some amount every month.
Yes, and there have been those who have theorized that that's one of the reasons when women hit menopause, that their risk of heart attacks goes up to the same as men's.
Yes, yes, we've talked about that on the show. But there's something else. So from a detox standpoint, there is no better way to detoxify the body than to get on a regimented, planned phlebotomy program. I give blood every 2 months. In fact, I already have my appointment for July 22nd. I go in, I give a pint, and I go out, and I'm fine. I don't fall down. I don't feel dizzy. Everything is great. You don't have to worry about it. But something else happens when you give blood.
Mm-hmm.
In the process of making new blood, the body makes a lot of new great stuff, like, guess what? Stem cells.
Stem cell therapy.
We hear all this great stuff about stem cells, yes. Mesenchymal stem cells, the progenitor stem cells that can become any type of tissue, they're ideal for repairing organ tissue, muscle tissue, brain tissue, everything. They're like the body's little favorite toolbox. All of a sudden, the body becomes flooded with them, and they can go to work, assuming that you're getting enough real vitamin A in your diet, which is required for differentiation of stem cells. They can go to work and repair damaged tissue in the body.
Hmm.
Turn back the hands of time.
And people are taking cells out, and they're spinning them down and concentrating them, which again is different than the way the body does it.
Yes, absolutely. The other thing that it does, as you pointed out a second ago, is it lowers hematocrit immediately. It also lowers blood pressure immediately.
Yes.
I mean, it's just there is one of the greatest well-kept secrets about health and anti-aging that no one talks about, and that really even fewer people probably even know about, is donating blood on a regular basis. And start as young as you can if you're a guy. Start in your 20s. Your body will just pay you back. When you're 130 years old and somebody says to you, what do you attribute aging so well to? You could say, I heard these two crazy guys on the radio tell me to give blood every 2 months, and I did it.
Yeah, right. And you told me about a study that was done quite some time ago. I believe it was in animals. That talked about how behavior was changed in those who just got transfusions of a young to younger blood.
Yes.
To an older person.
There's a group of Chinese authors, scientists in China that I've tried to have on my show over the years, but the English barrier is just too difficult for them, but I've communicated with them. They've done two well-done studies where they took old rats and young rats, and all they did was give them transfusions from each other. They gave the old rats the blood of the young rats, and the old rats, within days, started to display the behaviors of the young rats. Within weeks, their coat and quality of skin changed. Their appetites went up. Their activity levels went up. The lordosis went up. They wanted to have sex with the other female rats more often. They got young. Now, I don't talk about this on my show because I'm afraid people are going to think, oh, you're talking about vampires and Dracula. You know, we're going to use other people's blood to stay young. And I can, you know, and people have visions of young children being up, hooked up to IVs.
Right,
and
right.
Old people. And no, but you can get the same results by donating blood regularly. What
yes.
it was, wasn't that the blood from the young rats was magic.
It had more testosterone in it.
Yeah, brand new clean blood. It was brand new clean blood. The other rats were old. The blood had lots of bad cells, misshapen blood cells. Iron accumulation is, you know, we talk about iron being important. When there's too much iron in the blood, it becomes less efficient at carrying oxygen, not more efficient at carrying oxygen.
Yeah, and can be a metabolic bomb as far as damage to tissues and changing in insulin sensitivity and so forth. When it goes too far, we call that hemochromatosis, which you don't even you usually do have a thick blood, and that's probably part of the disease process. But the iron itself is a very chemically active and potent molecule, and the ability to get to recirculate from your own marrow. I mean, you pull out, you store things in every tissue, fat cells, blood cells. The body has it tries to compartmentalize things, but in essence, a lot of the toxins are detectable in most of your tissues, and one of those is blood. But it's hard to you can't cut your foot off and grow a new one. But blood is a place where you can do that.
Yes, and it's the true detoxifier. If you really, you don't have to buy pills. You don't have to stay home because you got to go to the potty all day long because of some drink that you drank. You go and donate blood, and you know what the best part of all of it is, Matt?
What's that?
Your blood could save a life.
That's right. Yep.
Not only are you prolonging your life, but you're probably going to prolong somebody else's life as well.
That's right. It's a community thing. And we make that, we're going to start doing it more just kind of like you say, as a therapeutic for a variety of, I'll say conditions, but maybe even just for general health. It's certainly a part of our regimen when we put any guy on testosterone, whatever form, if that's injectable, if that's a topical or whatever. We say that we know that your blood can get thicker, and we know that hematocrit goes up, and those two don't necessarily always go together. Again, there aren't many places that can truly check just a plain old blood viscosity. There are some clinical signs. Sometimes it's just fatigue. TIA-like symptoms in a guy you can't find that's had a stroke, for example. But and other people that are really at risk for this are those who have a lot of sleep apnea.
You want to hear something funny? So I started talking about blood donations a few years ago. The first show I did was with Dr. Michael Smith from Life Extension Foundation. We talked about iron buildup and sluggish blood and poor transport of oxygen. And also, when you have clean blood, toxins can come out of the cells and into the blood, and then you do it again, and you keep doing this over and over again. Eventually, the toxins caught in the tissue actually drops because you're using the blood as a vehicle to kind of siphon it out.
Right.
And we did a show again a couple months ago about this, and I had a guy message me and say that he used to snore. He had obstructive sleep apnea. But he was giving blood every 2 months, as we discussed on the show. Now, I'm not suggesting this is going to happen to everybody, because it didn't happen to me yet. I still snore. But he said that he stopped snoring.
Wow.
And it could be that his blood was so sluggish that he was not carrying oxygen properly, and it was causing breathing pattern problems. You know, because sleep apnea could be centrally mediated. The thermostat
right.
of the body that registers how much oxygen and how much carbon dioxide in the blood gets messed up, and
yep.
you just hold your breath more often.
Yep, that's right. That's right. We don't understand even all the things that will control all those mechanisms, you know, like we do anything. But I think it's a brilliant thing for you to try. And you've got a regimen in mind to do this along with specific dietary plans and exercise, and you're planning to adjust those things a bit based on that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. I have a suspicion there are autoimmune disorders out there that I have a suspicion with the proper dietary modifications and also with some specific activity type styles and regular blood donation that people can see amazing changes in their body.
It's sure worth a try. You know, one thing that strikes me about tons of autoimmune conditions, I bet I have 200 to 300 patients that I've identified, and for every one of them, there's probably 10 more at least, who have what I would call some smoldering tendency toward an autoimmune condition. And it's not like it's like it's not flared up enough to actually be able to look at it clearly and identify it. It's just kind of rolling around under the surface. And tons of those people that I've seen over, you know, the last 15 years, they do fine for a while, and some of them never show up anything, and then, but a great number of them, boom, one day they turn around and they got full-blown lupus. And I've always thought, you know, a little like with diabetes, why the heck do I have to wait till your pancreas is dead to treat it? And with these autoimmune conditions, I've thought, why do I have to wait until this thing shows up to declare itself before we decide what medicine to give it? There have to be some ways that, you know, symptoms to me are a way of the body trying to communicate to us what's going on with it.
That's
and,
right.
And when you detect those, intervene early, not waiting so late.
So think about what you just said. And again, we talked about certain medications being designed to rescue a patient from the precipices of death so that we could prop them up, or you can prop them up. And then once they're strong again, start to address the root causes of their issue, and by addressing those, eliminating the disease state entirely. This happens regularly. But think about this. The physicians who are not critical thinkers like you are, who just prescribe a medication to a person that masks the symptoms. And the analogy I give on my show is this, because everybody loves car analogies, right? You go into the mechanic and you say, look, I've got this knocking coming out of my engine. It's ominous, and I know something is wrong. Something's going to break. And so he takes a look at the car, and he comes back to you, and he says, I got it all fixed. And he hands you a set of earmuffs. And he says, whenever you drive the car, just wear these. You won't hear the knocking, so the problem is fixed. Now, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, but that is exactly what pharmaceuticals do. They mask the symptoms so that you can prop the patient up and get them away from the precipices of death. But then, if you allow them to live with the alarm system no longer signaling there's a problem, they are still broken. But this time, they're going to break for real at some point in the future, and the drug isn't going to be able to help them do anything at that point in time.
That's exactly right. I hate and love that analogy, Carl, because it's too daggone true.
Well, you know, but see, doctors like you are few and far between. Doctors like you look at the patient and assess the severity of the problem, and if the problem is something that is not life-threatening right now, let's look at ways to get you healthy. Let's look at your activity levels. Let's look at your diet. Let's look at the things you've been exposed to. Not immediately going for the script pad and writing out, say, here, you know, you need this. Go to the pharmacy and pick this up and leave me alone.
Yeah. You know, my dad, God bless him, he told me years ago that I needed to be doing IV vitamin therapy and Myers cocktails for people. And you know, and he's always from a holistic standpoint, he's known a lot, and he's usually right, which just ticks me off sometimes. but I had my own sort of internal struggles and things to overcome. You know, learning a new technique, when am I going to use it? What are colleagues going to think? Da 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 da. But finally, I got sort of up the courage, or you know, had enough barriers go down that we tried to do it. Man, I can't tell you how many doggone drugs we've stopped since people have been doing that. And I didn't in any way anticipate, or I never told anybody, take this and you're going to get off your antidepressant. I never said, take this and you won't need anti-inflammatories. And never. I just said, here's stuff that most people are low on. Let's put it in, see what happens. And then their body turned around, and I won't go so far as Linus Pauling and say that every condition that happens to people is due to some nutritional deficiency, because, you know, running your car under a semi has nothing to do with that and kill you dead.
But
it happens a lot more than the body of medical information, which is driven so much by money and pharmaceuticals, is going to let us know. So again, like you said, critical thinking. Things that if you can't overdo it easy, then presuming you might underdo it and trying to ramp up what you're getting in ain't a bad plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Really is.
Awesome. Well, Carl, we're at the end of this time. It always goes fast talking to you, whether we're on a show or just socially doing it. So I really appreciate you coming on, and tell people where they can find you again.
Superhumanradio.com. one-stop shop for everything related to fitness, health, and anti-aging.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, and thanks for being on here.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
And thanks for joining us on Healthy Bloomington with Dr. Andree.